Blog Talk Radio.
Good morning, everyone. This is Johnny Tan, author of From My Mama's Kitchen, Food for the Soul, Recipes for Living. Welcome to my weekly From My Mama's Kitchen talk radio show. My guest for this morning is award-winning author Dr. David Hamilton. Dr. Hamilton and I will be discussing about Choice Point, Align Your Purpose. The book and movie reveal insights from some of the world's leading change makers, including Archbishop Desmond Tutu, Sir Richard Branson, Jack Canfield, and His Holiness the Dalai Lama. Good morning, David. Welcome to From My Mama's Kitchen Talk Radio. How are you doing this morning?
I'm doing great, Johnny, and how are you this morning?
Wonderful. Yeah. As a matter of fact, I should say, how are you doing this afternoon?
I'm approximately 6 hours ahead, so I'm calling from sunny Windsor, a town called Windsor just outside London. It's actually the same town as the Queen.
Wonderful.
She lives 1 kilometer from my house and up in the castle.
It's me.
Yeah, it's really cool. Although, we've been here for 7 years and she's never once popped in for tea. So I don't know how to take that.
Oh, I see. Well, perhaps you didn't quite get that invitation across to her.
Yeah, maybe that's what happened. Maybe I just haven't invited her, which I haven't actually.
Wonderful. Choice Point is an awesome book. It is very inspiring and thought-provoking. The timing of its release is perfect. The entire world is going through what I can see as a metamorphosis of self-empowerment. So congratulations.
Yeah. No, thank you very much. Yeah, I'm very proud of what we've created with the book and the film, really. So it's been something. I think the time is, you're right, I think the time is just right, because it's about choice points. It's about making choices in one way, in one sense, to be the next highest version of ourselves.
That's right. Very true. So let us start by getting to know you a little better. Please give us a quick walkthrough of your life from childhood to the present moment.
Well, I grew up in a little village in central Scotland, a little village called Banknock, which I'm sure none of your viewers will ever have heard of. it's a very small village. And I think, you know, I had a very happy childhood, but there's one incident that kind of, in one way, set the direction of my life. I could at least look back and say it played a role in what I'd currently do. And it was when I was a child, my mum had postpartum depression. Mm-hmm. And it was after the birth of my youngest sister, which was in 1976, and I was born in 1970. So I was about 5.5 years old at the time when my mum had this depression. And it wasn't really fully understood at the time, so the advice the medical profession gave my mum was to give herself a shake. So it wasn't really understood as well as depression is nowadays. And I had this wish, desire to help my mum, even though my mum didn't ever say she was ill and she was depressed. She didn't tell the children, but you could just tell, really. I think you just know, you can feel it when other people need help. And I was 11 years old, and my English teacher at school took us on a tour of the local public library. And as corny as this might sound to some of your listeners, a book fell off the shelf, and it was called The Magic Power of Your Mind. And it was by an author called Walter Germain. And I had the strong sense that that book could help my mum. So I just put it in my bag. I didn't know that you were supposed to join libraries and borrow books. So I just put it in my bag. And you know, I gave it to my mum, and it really helped her. It didn't, you know, of course, it didn't cure depression in a day. But what it did do for my mum was it taught her simple strategies, and it gave her faith in herself that rather than feeling powerless, that there's nothing that she could do, it gave her the sense that maybe there are a few simple things that I can do to help myself navigate through these difficult times. So my mum started to use affirmations a lot, and she would say things like mind over matter, and she'd, you know, shake her hand and go, mind over matter, it's all in the mind, you know, I can do it, and it's a thought that counts. And it was very much, she talked about mind over matter and the power of the mind a lot, and really it was for herself, as an affirmation. But I grew up hearing that type of thing a lot. So when I went on to higher education, I did a degree in chemistry, biological medicinal chemistry, and I got a PhD in chemistry. So I chose a classical education route, but I ended up working for one of the world's biggest drug companies, and I was building drugs for for heart disease and for cancer.
Mm-hmm.
And when we started to get medical trial results, medical data, seeing how well the drug's working, let's say, for example, you find 75% of people improve in the drug, mm-hmm. it wasn't uncommon, especially in my major field, which was heart disease, mm-hmm. to have 70% of people improving on the placebo, which is a fake drug.
Right.
Because they thought they were getting the drug. So where all my colleagues were excited about the drug, the results of the trial, because, you know, 75% of people improved in the drug, I had no interest in it at all. All I was interested in was the 70% who improved on the placebo.
Right.
Because they thought they were getting the drug. And that was because I had grown up hearing my mum talk about the power of the mind.
Right.
So that my interest was immediately drawn to mind, to the power of the mind to shape the chemistry of our bodies and our lives and our health. So after 4 years, I resigned from the industry. And I started mm-hmm. to write books on, you know, the power of the mind. My first book was called It's the Thought That Counts.
Mm-hmm.
And it was blending the science of the mind-body connection with evidence for how holistic therapies work, and also mm-hmm. talking about the interconnectedness of life and how changing or how being kind and compassionate can mm-hmm. actually make a positive difference in the world. And so I've 7 books later, they've all gone in a series, a theme of some sort mm-hmm. that talks about the power of the mind to even change our reality as well
right.
as heal our bodies. So that's, I think that's roughly what got me to where I am now. I mean, I mm-hmm. got involved in Choice Point
mm-hmm.
because Harry Massey, the producer of Choice Point, he produced an earlier film called The Living Matrix.
Mm-hmm.
And he'd been going around interviewing, you know, authors like Jack Canfield from Chicken Soup for the Soul, Greg
right.
Braden, Barbara Max Hubbard, and even some philanthropists and scientists. And he'd read one of my books
mm-hmm.
and asked if I would like to be interviewed for the film. And I thought, well, great, it sounds good. And after I did my interview, Harry felt that I had explained the science
right.
of what Choice Point was really about with a lot of clarity. So he asked if I would write the book, and then my publisher, Hay House, said they would like
yeah.
to publish it. So that's kind of a very concise history of my professional life so far.
That's fantastic, and you're right, because the mind is a very powerful substance, and we have a choice to whether nourish it with the right things or with the
yeah.
wrong things. What you have done in the book, and it's very true what Harriet mentioned, because you have to really define it where people can relate to the clarity of how science comes into the picture here in terms of understanding
yeah.
how powerful our minds are and how we can use it for our betterment, so to speak. So let's
yeah.
talk about what is Choice Point.
Yeah, well, Choice Point, it was the term was actually for the film. The film mm-hmm. initially was called Mastering the Matrix.
Mm-hmm.
It was supposed to be a follow-on from Harry Massey's previous film, The Living Matrix. But
mm-hmm.
Greg Braden, in his interviews, Greg Braden's a very famous author in the science and spirituality, and Greg suggested that a more appropriate name would be Choice Point.
I agree.
yeah, definitely. And we decided to go for it because it was a term borrowed from physics. Because
mm-hmm.
what a choice point really is, it's a moment in time where a choice that you make has the greatest potency to affect the future. And
mm-hmm.
I guess it's a bit like you're walking down a road and you come to a fork in the road. Now, most people take the path that's most familiar to them.
Right.
But I think many people are familiar with the idea that we think on average about 100,000 thoughts a day, but about
mm-hmm.
90,000 of them are the same or the same kind of thoughts we
right.
had the day before.
Mm-hmm.
So we tend to have momentum in our life such that we will always choose the same path.
Right.
And what a choice point offers you is observing that other possibilities exist. And if I can perhaps, instead of going left, today I can go right.
Mm-hmm.
And the choice then is, it's a choice to choose a higher version of ourselves,
mm-hmm.
which might be, you know, a version of ourselves that is more kind or more
right.
compassionate or more courageous, it might be, or even more confident
right.
or more of something else entirely, and
mm-hmm.
to really step into it and embrace it. And with
mm-hmm.
an understanding that at these particular moments in time, there are special moments in time where science kind of, I guess physics stacks the deck in a particular way, that there are particular moments in time
mm-hmm.
where the choices that you make have much greater potency than perhaps they would have done a day earlier or a year earlier. So overall, Choice Point came from that understanding of what these particular moments in time are and when
mm-hmm.
they arise and how to recognize them.
Very true, because what you're talking about is timing, number one. And number two is about having that courage, that confidence in making the choice of getting away from the comfort zone sometimes. I have someone that I know that like to use the term, he or she is like an old shoe. So it's comfortable. But the danger of that is that, well, guess what? That fit never changes.
Yeah, I know. You know, I absolutely agree. And, you know, I can relate to that personally, in my own personal life, because I resigned from my job in this big drugs company back in 1999, so about 13 years ago. And I had been, you know, I was a scientist and I'd risen up the ranks very quickly, and I'd been given, you know, quite, you know, I guess very special career opportunities that if I stayed with the company, they would make sure that I got really high up in the company. And it was very potentially very lucrative, but it was also very comfortable.
Yeah.
And it represented doing something that it wasn't, my heart didn't really lie in the area, but it could have been comfortable. I could have ended up with, you know, at the time, I could have went on to have a nice house and a nice car. It was comfortable, but my heart wasn't in it. And I decided, it took a lot of courage, but I thought, my heart, my destiny, I feel, lies in writing books and giving talks, being a, you know, a speaker, explaining things. So I decided one day to take that leap of faith into the unknown, so it really broke out of my comfort zone in a massive way. And it was challenging at first, but but, you know, looking back 13 years later, I wouldn't have had it any other way, and my life is a million times better now than it was then. It just took a bit of courage to step out of that comfort zone.
Right. And having said that, there's nothing wrong with if you decide to choose to keep your old shoe, but and always remember this, you have to align your goals to meet your behavior, or if not, then you have to change your behavior to match your goal. Because if your goal is very comfortable with that old shoe, then by all means, there's nothing wrong with that. But don't ever complain because there is a conflict from within.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, I completely agree. And it's what I guess it's a simple way of looking at things, but a very, very powerful way of looking at things. It's really just reminding ourselves to notice what's inside your own head and to notice the way in which you are behaving in your life. It's really self-observation, isn't it?
Right, very much so. So how can people know when they are at a choice point?
Hey, that's a good one, because there are big choice points, but there's also smaller choice points in our lives. And I would say that whenever we're faced with personal challenges in our lives, that's a choice point. Because what a choice point actually gives you is an opportunity, or let me put that another way, a choice point provides you with an invitation. And the invitation is to rise up and be more than you've been before. So whenever you're challenged, whether it be in your personal life or financially or in your career or in any other way, even with work, with people at work, whenever you're in a challenged in some way, it might be a crisis or it might just be a significant challenge, then that's a choice point, because we have a choice to face the challenge in the same way that we have gone before, or say, is the universe inviting me here to be a higher version of myself, to reach inside and to find an extra bit of courage, or to reach inside and find an extra bit of compassion, or an extra bit of empathy, or an extra bit of kindness or confidence, or whatever the invitation for me is. And I would say that's how you can recognize a choice point, when you're faced with a challenge in life. So the choice is to just face the challenge the way you always have, or to see, can I become more? Can I become more right now? And that, and I think we have those types of choice points quite a lot in our lives. I would also say that there are times when there are very large choice points that are more on a global level, like right now. We look at the state of the world and we see we're facing, you know, a number of crises that all collected together maybe in a way that we haven't really seen before. And so that there's a number of, you know, crises from the banking system, you know, financial crises, even over in the Middle East, there's lots of crises there, and in Africa with, you know, the Syria and the Arab Springs, and we have all, and with poverty, overpopulation, and all these things happening together at the one time. And I reckon that this is a particular time in history where collectively we have a choice to find a better way, a way that perhaps, you know, the film Choice Point is about moving out of a period of time where the love of power has been allowed to flourish and flipping the whole thing in its head and moving towards the power of love. And this is why maybe you're seeing a manifestation of this in the world. You're seeing many of the power systems in the world collapsing, like financial power systems, especially I'm in Europe at the moment, and you know, we've had huge crises with the euro and with different currencies in Greece and in Spain and Ireland and other countries, and there was potential for collapse of the currency for a while. So we've seen a lot of financial crises over here. And so many of the power systems are collapsed. You see the power systems of dictators in Africa and the Middle East as well. And many of these power systems are collapsing. And what's rising up is the power of people. And the power of people who want freedom and democracy and you know, more love and more peace and happiness and more, you know, more opportunities in the life. So we're actually seeing a movement from the love of power towards the power of love. And Choice Point actually predicts this, that at this particular moment in time, coming up to the end of this year, then of course we're at the end of a large cosmic cycle, so we should be seeing collective sets of crises in our life. So that will, because everyone is interconnected in life and the whole world is interconnected, then if the world is going through these crises, then it's no surprise that a number of people individually are facing a greater number of personal challenges than they have done in the past. So I would say at the moment in time there is a big, big choice point. And the invitation then, what we try to express in the film, is the invitation is to look inside ourselves and say, can I somehow choose love? Can I choose to express the power of love more than I have done before? However that relates to my life. I mean, everyone has their own individual situations, but could that mean, you know, more patience, or could that mean, you know, being more understanding of people? Could that be, you know, expressing myself fearlessly by loving myself, for example? Or might that even be taking what I do in life and finding a way to help other people to expand, to help other people to flourish in their life? So all of these ways are represent a choice point in ourselves. An invitation to move towards the power of love, away from, I guess, fear is really the love of power. So you know, what we've always talked about is moving from fear to love. So this is exactly the same thing. We've just used different terms. You know, the love of power, which is fear, towards the power of love, which is love.
Right. Very true. In your book, you talk about how our mind influences reality, and this is something that I want to talk about because it's very important. Because many a times, we may in some ways sometimes live in a fantasy world.
Yeah.
But then fantasy can be good as well, because it does create that opportunity for us to expand and become very creative. So let's talk a little bit about how our mind influences the reality.
Yeah. Well, one of the ways I personally describe this to people is, you know, when I was a scientist in the pharmaceutical industry, one of the things I learned by studying the placebo effect is that every thought and every way of thinking changes the chemistry of your body. So, for example, if you're thinking of someone who causes you stress or anger, then you produce stress and anger chemicals in the brain. You also produce them in the adrenal glands, and you actually flood your blood vessels with particular hormones that cause a movement of blood towards your major muscles, and you have a shift in the chemistry of your body that started out as some thoughts in your head. If, for example, instead you thought of people that you love, then you produce, you know, different chemistry in the brain. You elevate dopamine levels in the brain and the brain's natural versions of morphine and heroin. You also produce a hormone called oxytocin in the heart, which causes a dilation of the arteries and it counteracts some of the chemicals that seed heart disease. So what we're doing by moving to love in our minds is we change the chemistry of our bodies. But in the same way, moving any way of thinking changes the chemistry of our lives, and that we impact the relationships and even the circumstances of our lives we can shape. So, you know, thinking of, you know, when a person visualizes something like a hope or a dream, what that actually does is it changes the structure of the brain. And the more you imagine the same thing happening, the more the brain begins to change in such a way that the brain can't distinguish between whether it's really happening or whether you're just imagining it. And one of the skills in life is to get out of the way. And what I mean by getting out of the way is refrain from believing that you can't have something, or refrain from believing that I'm not good enough, for example. and allow yourself to really get there. Now, saying that, there are times in our life where some things are more likely than others. And I have a little metaphor that I use. And I imagine, so what I've just described there is our ability to create, to shape our lives through, you know, focusing our minds on things. But I have this metaphor that imagine you're on a big wide river and you have you're on a little boat and you have a paddle. Now, the paddle represents your intentions, your mind, so you can paddle to the left and you can paddle to the right. And this is what we call the law of attraction. You can attract things that you focus on. And or you could do what most people do most of the time and just paddle around in a wee circle, which I have done in my own life as well. But what we don't realize is that the river has currents in it. And sometimes you're trying to paddle over to the right, but you're part of a current that's moving you forward and down to the left.
Right.
And so sometimes in life, rather than trying to get to manifest or create something in life, sometimes we're better off just going with the flow or letting go or detaching from the outcome, as they say. And quite often we end up where we wanted to go anyway, but just by a different route.
Right.
So I think sometimes in life there are times when no matter what you're trying to do, it's almost like the universe has a flow to it and we're moving in a particular direction. So not everything is possible all of the time. Whereas other times the current is very gentle and you really can paddle wherever you like. So I guess in some ways there's this subtle interplay between what we might call forces of destiny and our own free will, if all of that makes sense.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, definitely. I mean, it's true what you were talking about, because sometimes we get a little bit confused and we're trying to force the issue. And we let our emotions ride the tide and be the force of the change. And unfortunately, that doesn't mean that you can force change, but is it lasting change?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, because what we actually want is lasting change.
Right.
You know, and lasting change often comes when we, you know, we fully become that which we're trying to change, and that's what we're trying to create. And we kind of live it and breathe it, if you like. And, you know, and sometimes I think if we use our own intuition, and, you know, rather than just always trying to create some, maybe because we saw somebody else having something, so we want to have that as well, if we actually use our intuition and ask ourselves honestly, what do I feel is most important for me here right now, then you might find that you'll sense the current that you're on. So rather than trying to pull to the left or the right, you'll sense that actually now is the time to go forwards, because that's where the current is actually taking me in the world at the moment.
Right. And these are the things in your book you talk about. It's not necessarily just from, a spirituality standpoint of view. To me, in reading the book, someone may say, well, it's not necessarily a religious book, or it is a religious book, or a spiritual book, or it's not a spiritual book. What understanding that you have is to understand that you have an inner voice. And listen to that inner voice, whatever that may be. To you, may be the Holy Spirit that's moving you. And to others might be something else. It doesn't matter. But the idea is, if you pay attention, and by just staying still and be quiet, that quiet moments, 9 times or 10 times, the answers are right there in front of you on which way you need to be going.
I absolutely agree. It's like, you're right, you sense the current that you want. You sense the current that's ahead of you. And then you'll find that the choices that you make were always the right, were always destined for you.
Right.
Yeah, and it's almost like you manifest your own destiny.
Right. In your book, we talk about be the change, and it's, of course, that's a famous quote from Mohandas Gandhi. How does that figure into the choice poem paradigm?
Yeah, what we were trying to get across is that, you know, sometimes we, you know, I think many people in the world want to make a difference in the world. And what we were getting at with be the change is, we covered a wee bit of science in the film and in the book about how we're all interconnected. So through interconnectedness in the world, what you get is every action that you take and every way that you're behaving has a ripple effect. So you could think of it like if you drop a pebble in a pond. So it makes a little splash, but it creates little waves, little ripples. And at the other side of the pond, as the ripple moves outwards, a lily pad might rise and fall as a consequence of the wave. Now, the lily pad is rising and falling because of a pebble dropped in a pond, but you can take that into your own life and think of ourselves as the pebbles. So as we're making waves in our life, as we're going about our lives, we're always making waves. So, and the pond represents the interconnectedness of life. Mm-hmm. So that the actions that we take and the way that we behave are always having an effect. And so in the film, in the book, Choice Point, we were pointing out that your actions are not isolated. Your ways of thinking are not isolated, that we're always having an effect in the world. So let's take responsibility for the effect we're having. Mm-hmm. And so be the change is saying, if I want, for example, a more peaceful world, mm-hmm. it does little good if my intention is to have peace, but yet I'm in conflict with my neighbour, mm-hmm. or I'm in fighting with my family, or am I having, you know, real angry discussions with colleagues at work. Mm-hmm. Because if in one hand I want peace, but then I'm acting in a way that's not congruent with that, then mm-hmm. what I'm actually doing is creating waves of non-peace, if you like, waves of conflict.
Sure.
So what I'm actually passing out through the interconnectedness of the world, through this ripple effect, what I'm actually doing is creating disharmony. I'm creating mm-hmm. more conflict in the world, even though I'm talking to people about peace and I'm looking at the news and I'm getting angry. I'm saying we should be at peace in the world, but yet my behaviours are not at peace. So mm-hmm. and Choice Point, I mean, that's mm-hmm. just one example. You could swap peace for compassion or right. a world that's more fair. And then you say, well, am I being fair in my life with other people? Am I completely in harmony with what I'm actually saying?
Yeah.
So you could replace peace with any virtue, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
And so, mm-hmm. so with Choice Point, it was recognizing the impact of the choices that we make and the actions we take on others and saying, if I want to change the world, then the only way I can do it is to be the change. And this is why we used Mohandas Gandhi's term, because it is very, very popular. People understand it, and all we really
right.
did was add this extra wee bit of science
right.
to explain how the ripple effect actually takes place in the world, so that people can understand that we are far more powerful and far more influential in the world than we think we are. Even
right.
smiling at someone in the street has more of an effect than you think.
Right, very true. In your book, you talk about dancing in time with the music, which I like that very much.
Yeah.
I am a ballroom dancer, so I...
Oh, really? Wow.
Yeah.
I did a bit of ballroom dancing when I was at school.
Awesome. So
yeah, yeah.
One of my late mom was a ballroom dance instructor, and of course she
cool.
taught me ballroom dancing, so I really enjoyed it very much. When
yeah.
I saw the subtitle, Dancing in Time with the Music, I had to go to that page first to read about it.
Yeah.
Book talks about Bill Gates and also about Mark Zuckerberg. And
yeah.
what's interesting about it, as you mentioned about just now, about being the force of change within, and you have these two individuals that basically saw the opportunity in terms of being able to make a change in the world. And it's
yeah.
basically out of their own personal self. So why don't you tell us a little bit more about that in terms of the concept of dancing in time with the music?
Yeah, what we were suggesting there is using people like Mark Zuckerberg and Bill Gates as examples, that there are particular times that are more ripe for particular mm. things. So we used the example, you know, Facebook emerged when
yeah.
people wanted to connect. You know, you were seeing an explosion in the number of cell phones in the world. You were seeing people connecting through the internet with emails. And Facebook emerged because there was a particular time when doing that would have worked. Mark Zuckerberg could have tried Facebook 10 years earlier, it wouldn't have worked.
Right.
But there was so Dancing in Time with the Music recognizes that there are particular times where the opportunity exists for something that it might not exist at another time. And so one of the things you have to do is just, I guess, feel the pulse of the world, if you like. You know, be aware of what's happening in the world.
Right.
And you know, if you want to go into the actual science of this, one of the ways we were describing it is that all of reality is what you call fractal based.
Mm-hmm.
And what that basically means is the same pattern repeats itself on larger and larger scales.
Mm-hmm.
So if you look at the way that subatomic particles vibrate, then you get little periods of vibration and then not so much, and then periods of vibration, not so much. And you see the same. And this vibration thing is repeated when you get to atoms. So atoms spin, so you have this vibration effect, and
right.
you know, you can follow the same things. You can come to molecules, and you have, you know, a rotation of molecules, but what you also have is clumps of matter. And what you get with subatomic particles is you get clumps and then space and then clumps and then space. But what you get, if you scale that up to every single level, you even look at the world that we live in, we have cities, clumps of people, and then space, and then clumps of people in another city and space. So you see that thing clumping in space from the subatomic level, the atomic level, up to the level of our life. You look up into space, into the universe, and you see clumps of galaxies, and then huge areas where there's no matter at all, and then clumps again. So what we're suggesting is there's a pattern. And so, and because there's patterns to reality, then what you'll find in life is there are times where it's mostly space, and it means that there's not very much happening. But then you've got other times where there's big clumps of matter, if you like, and there's massive opportunities for a lot of things. So one of the things we were hinting at in Dance in Time with the music is at this moment in time, there is a clump of matter, so to speak. There are huge opportunities for cooperation in the world. Huge opportunities for, you know, helping each other out. Huge opportunities for connecting with each other. I mean, Facebook is really, it's a manifestation of our desire to connect with each other. So, so in a sense, there will, physics will always make sure that there are times for some things, and other periods of time, it won't be the right time for it. And I know that's getting into more complex science than maybe some of the your listeners would have preferred to hear. But we, but one of the things we did in the book was we took the stuff in the film and we explored it with it deeper, because some people want to go a little bit deeper and understand what the concepts actually are. So you can explain the same, you can answer the same question in two different ways.
Right.
You know, so so Dancing in Time with the Music, in more practical sense, is really just about noticing what's going on, feeling the pulse of the world, and saying, is there something that I can do right now that fits with that pulse? If the world is moving in a particular way, can I, you know, get in with that pulse? You know, and so that's the most practical way of looking at it. That, but as I say, there is science underpinning it, which says that there are, there is a pulse to life, and so sometimes it will be up and sometimes it will be down, so to speak.
Very true. Basically, everything in life, in existence, whether you have a scientific mind or otherwise, there is a rhythm, a universal rhythm.
Yeah, absolutely.
You have a choice here whether you want to get with the rhythm or not. And timing is everything, and that's what the dance of life is all about.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, and that, that rhythm of life, if you even look at, you know, the way that the heart beats in and out and in and out. And it's funny because you have this, this, it's a cycle of in and out, and in and out, and in and out. And, and you see that pulse all throughout the universe. Because if you go up to, if you look at, the sun moves across the sky, and that, that's actually caused by the rotation of the earth. So the earth is rotating, and you have this, this pulse of night, day, night, day, night, day. Now what that's actually doing, that the light that strikes the retina of the eye actually activates and deactivates a little gene in the brain. And the gene in the brain is called the clock gene. It drives our circadian rhythms. It means a circadian locomotor output cycles kaput, clock. And as that little clock gene goes on, off, on, off, on, off, it drives production of a little hormone called melatonin, which causes us to sleep and wake and sleep and wake. So the fact that we sleep and wake and sleep and wake is a consequence of the sun moving across the sky. So night and day, it is actually the sun moving across the sky, this rotation of the earth, you know, back to the same place again, in, out, on, off, just like the heart beats, beats, beats. So all of this, so you see this pulse absolutely everywhere. The pulse even exists on a cosmic scale. The sun goes around our galaxy every 250 million years, so there's like a pulse back to the same place again, pulse back to the same place. And if you scale it right down to the quantum scale, what you see again is subatomic particles coming into existence and then disappearing. So it's a pulse. It's a pulse. So every single scale of reality you look at, in every single way, you will always find a pulse of life. It's like the breath. It's like a continual breath. Life is breathing in and out and in and out. And sometimes if you just catch the pulse, then the most magical things can happen.
Very true. That leads us to the defining of one's purpose. How does one actually really define one's purpose?
Yeah, there's many ways. One of the things that we created, ChoicePoint has a transformation program online. It's a 36-step program that's online, and there's 36 videos, 15-minute videos that go with those. But there's also meditations. One of the meditations we have is helping people to find their purpose, to define their purpose. That basically, you know, all what the meditation is actually doing is tapping into the main way that we find our purpose in life. And it's asking yourself, you know, what really excites me? What is my passion in life? You know, what is it really important to me in life? And sometimes people find their purpose when they're in a crisis, when they're in a challenging situation. You know, myself, I went through a period of depression when I was working in the pharmaceutical industry, in the drug industry. And at the time, you know, I was making drugs and doing all that, and things weren't entirely clear for me. What I really loved doing was reading spiritual books and reading, you know, self-help and mind-body-spirit books. And it was only when I was using those books as one of the ways to navigate through the difficult times that I started to notice that even though I was in this job as a scientist and you know, at the time, the thought didn't enter my mind that I could possibly be doing anything else. Because, you know, after you've done, you know, 7 years at university, you know, four years for an honours degree and 3 years for a PhD, you kind of feel intellectually this is what I'm supposed to do. And I'm in this job for life now.
Right.
So the thought hadn't really entered my mind that I could be doing something else. But in the seeds of this time of depression, I was beginning to notice that my passion actually lay in explaining, you know, about the power of the mind, and my passion lay in understanding how things worked and understanding the ripple effect, and understanding how we could change the world.
Right.
So sometimes if during a difficult situation, if you're open to asking yourself a question, what is it, what does my passion actually lie, then you might find that it's a doorway out of where you are into somewhere that you actually want to go. So I think if we just look inside ourselves and say, what is my passion? You know, what really excites me? What kind of thing really excites me in life? And I would say that's one of the major ways that you can find your purpose and then define your purpose.
Very true. In your book, one of the things that is discussed by Jodi Orton is the fact that she made the choice of becoming an adoptive and foster parent to special needs children. And I think what you mentioned just now is very interesting in the sense that sometimes don't look too far out there. Look within.
Absolutely.
And if you're a parent, if you're a mother, if you're a father, even to the fact that if you are a brother or a sister, look at the purpose. How do you want to build that relationship first with the loved ones that you have? That will help you define your sense of purpose in life. And once you basically master that, then you take on the next level. Okay, what can I do for someone else's that is not in that inner circle, so to speak? What are your thoughts about that?
I love what you say there, Johnny, because I one of the things that I once heard years ago, and I've kept it in my mind so often, to remind myself what's important in life. Is I think it was Tony Robbins, the motivational speaker. I heard him say years and years and years ago. He was talking about, you know, when people get to, you know, the last 10 years of a life, let's say a person is in their 80s or 90s.
Right.
When we look back in our lives, the things that we remember the most are the quality of our relationships and the experiences that we have with the people close to us in life. And sometimes we spend so much time trying to figure out what am I supposed to do in life.
Right.
And maybe the most important thing is to look right around you right now. Who are your loved ones, and how can you deepen the relationship and improve the quality of what's happening, you know, the quality of your relationships in your life? Because it's the special moments with people that you love that you do remember most when you reflect on your life, not whether you got a promotion at the age of 35 and not the particular time that you got an award for something.
Right.
You know, these are just details. What we actually remember are the moments, the relationships, these special times. So I often say to people, you know, I was leading an Align Your Purpose workshop in Holland just a few days ago, and a few people said, you know, I feel under pressure that I need to find a great purpose in life. Mm-hmm. And this is the thing I encourage them to do, is to say, well, maybe your purpose at the moment isn't to find a particular massive thing about changing the world. Maybe your purpose is just to deepen your relationships right now, at this moment in time. Maybe your purpose is just about living a life of love and mm-hmm. peacefulness and mm-hmm. friendliness and happiness with the people close to you.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Very true. I had one guest several months back by the name of Peter Golden, well known for, you know, being a reporter and so forth. He had wrote a book for the first time, a nonfiction book. He's an award-winning author. And in the course of our conversation, he said something very, very interesting about love. He was sending his son or daughter to college. He and his wife was driving in a car. And I think this was off the air, actually, in the course of our conversation. And we talk about unconditional love and the things that are important to me, so to speak, in this case, him. And he said, for that moment in time, during that snow and driving down the road, I realized that the most important thing in my life, the treasure that my wealth is in this car, the three of us, nothing else matters. Not the bank account, nothing else. Not the house. It's here driving at 65 miles an hour. And just the three of us in the car, this is my treasure, my wealth, and everything that I own and I want to be.
Yeah. Do you know, Johnny, I completely relate to that. You, saying that, you prompted a memory in me. Now, almost 10 years ago, it was my dad's, my father's 60th birthday. And my dad, through a lot of his life, had, you know, he'd, I guess he hadn't been as much of a family man as, you know, maybe he could have been. He was a great dad, but maybe not, you know, he worked a lot and he wasn't as much of a family man. And there was a transition round about the time of my dad coming to 60. I think at the time in his life when you look at your life and you think, wait a minute, what is most important?
Right.
And it was a profound shift in my dad, profound shift towards being more with the family. And there's one thing he said to me on the night of his 60th, after many of the extended family, my dad's own brothers and sisters who were in their 60s and 70s had all come to the house in our own family, you know, my mum and dad obviously and three sisters, myself and all our wives and husbands and partners and stuff, and all the kids, and everyone was there. And at one point towards the end of the night, someone said to my dad, wouldn't it be great to win the lottery at this point in your life? Because my dad was, you know, obviously he wanted to retire.
Right, right.
And someone said, wouldn't it be great to win the lottery? My dad just, with absolute genuineness, he looked around at the family and he said, almost with a tear in his eye, he said, no, I've won the lottery already, looking at the family. Wow. And it was so profound. I went to bed that night with a tear in my eye because I'd never heard my dad have such a breakthrough like that before.
Right.
And it was absolutely extraordinary. It was almost 10 years ago and I've never forgotten it. It's these kind of moments that you do never forget, but it's recognizing that, you know, in the people that you have in your life, you have we all have won the lottery. The skill then is just to notice that,
right?
And we don't always notice because we think all these other things in life are so much more important, and we get too busy at work, and we get caught up with our challenges and struggles in life, and we forget to look at what's right in front of our face.
Very true. That's a wonderful story. Again, those are the kind of things that sometimes we don't pay attention to because we don't live our life in the present moment. We either live our life in the past or the future, but never today, right this moment.
Absolutely.
What can people do once they see the film and read the book?
Oh, lots. Well, there's actually this thing called Choice Point Movement. And if you click on choicepointmovement.com, you can actually watch the film for free. You can watch Choice Point film for free. You can just download it. So you watch the film, you can read the book. But what you can also do, there's two other things. If it interests you, we have a 36-week program. It's an Align Your Purpose transformation program. It's basically a very, very in-depth self-development program taking mm-hmm. yourself to, I guess, a level of mastery. And mm-hmm. we've used teachings from all of the teachers and leaders and masters and change makers that were interviewed for the film and the book, and put all their best teachings together to construct this 36-week program. So people can delve into that, and it takes the ideas of the film and the book onto another level, if you like. Another thing people can do is join the movement, which is really a free social network. Mm-hmm. So, you know, Facebook is a social network. We'll connect with each other. What we've basically done with Choice Point Movement is create a social network that isn't just about connecting with friends and seeing what your friends are up to. It's a social network for people who have ideas about changing the world. Mm-hmm. And I think there's millions of people out there who feel they have an idea. Wouldn't it be great if someone in the world just tried this? You know, we think sometimes we feel powerless because we don't know how to do things. So what the social network does, it allows you to post your ideas online. Mm-hmm. And what you'll find is there's always other people who have similar ideas. Some people have resources. So what the social network does is you start to, rather than just connecting with friends through Facebook, what we do is we start to connect with people who can help us, or people who have an interest in our ideas. Some people might have skills. Some people might have resources. And what you start finding is, rather than just being stuck in your own house with an idea that could somehow be better for the world, maybe something to do with social change or even nutrition or anything at all, you'll find that the people can come on board and start helping out, and you can become part of a team mm-hmm. that's moving towards this. And what mm-hmm. you end up getting is that the whole is greater than the sum of its parts. Is what mm-hmm. you can achieve together as a team is far more powerful than what we achieve individually. It reminds mm-hmm. me of one of the quotes we have that we often put around that goes with this. It's an old African proverb mm-hmm. that says, if you want to go fast, go alone. But if you want to go far, then go together.
Mm-hmm.
So what the Choice Point Movement social network does is it allows us to go far by working together. So
right.
it's really just a social network, not about just seeing what your friends are up to and posting pictures of your latest holiday. It's about having ideas and connecting with people to make a mm-hmm. difference in the world.
Mm-hmm. Very true. Where can someone go to buy your book and get more information about you and keep up with the latest happenings with Choice Points?
Well, Choice Point, you can go on www.choicepointmovement.com, and then you can access the film, the book. You can get links to the book. You can also, and also to the social network and the transformation program. You can also buy the book in any bookstore, Barnes and Noble, on Amazon, or from HayHouse.com.
Mm-hmm.
If people want to connect with me personally, my website is drdavidhamilton.com, mm-hmm. and I also have a Facebook page which you can access through my website, and you can connect with me. I usually reply to just about every message that comes through Facebook, so it's a good way to interact with people.
Mm-hmm.
So, and you know, I've got 7 books that you can access through my website as well, and a pile of free articles. I write different web articles every week, so people can read them. So there's a lot of information between Choice Point and myself that people can mm-hmm. access.
Mm-hmm. Very interesting. One of the challenges that people have, and I'm sure you agree with me with this, we have our own problems ourselves because we make this definition. We know our purpose and then staying the course. So in a nutshell, basically committing to our purpose. How can we do a better job with that?
Yeah, it's consistency. One of the mm-hmm. This is one of the reasons why the social network was created with Choice Point.
Mm-hmm.
Because sometimes when you're trying to commit to your path and trying to keep things going, you feel isolated and alone because maybe other people around you aren't changing, they're not doing a self-development thing. So when you start connecting with other people, then other people can track your progress and you can track theirs. So you can have friends online who will help you to get to where you want. It's almost like having buddies that mm-hmm. will help you to stay on your path. And people can actually give you little love points, you know, so when you reach a certain degree of development, you know, rather than getting a like in Facebook, you can get a love point, you know. So really, it becomes a way of people developing together mm-hmm. rather than individually. So it's one very clever way of staying on the path, so to speak, of, you know, seeing it right to the end. Because I've experienced that in my own life in the past, that you can have a great idea and it feels good at the time, but you run out of steam. But if you have other people who are checking up your progress and help coaching you along the way, then you're more likely to stay the course.
Very true. Very true. What is Choice Point's ultimate vision for the world?
Yeah, well, the vision really is to empower people to understand that we change the world by changing ourselves. You know, it was in fact, it was captured by that line. There was a guy, Robert Quinn, in the film who said, mm-hmm. we change the world by changing ourselves.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the ways in which we do that, he said that the purest form is when we ask ourselves the question, how can I transcend self-interest?
Mm-hmm.
How can I recognize that it's not just about me anymore? It's about me as interconnected to you.
Right.
In other words, it's about all of us together. So the vision of Choice Point is recognizing that it's not just about us. It's not just about me as an individual, but it's actually about all of us. So the choices that we make are not just for our own, you know, success in life. The
mm-hmm.
choices that we make, can we align them in such a way that they can positively impact the lives of everyone else at the same time?
Mm-hmm.
So that's the vision. It's harmonizing people, not asking everyone to do the same thing, but asking people to express their uniqueness in a way that does have a beneficial impact on everyone else, because we're all in this together.
Right. And I think the key word also is respect for others. It's not necessarily acceptance of what people do as much as the respect in knowing that every one of us have our own plan in life. And each plan leads to its own perfection in so many ways.
Yeah, absolutely. It's something I often say in my talks, really, is we're all different. We're all absolutely unique. And if we can respect other people's, where people are in their life, I mean, that's about being patient and having empathy, is respecting where people are in their life and respecting people's purposes in life and not trying to make everyone the same.
Mm-hmm.
Then there's actually a lot of personal freedom in that, and you also grant the other person freedom at the same time.
Right. Mm. Very true. Well, we're coming close to the end of the show. One of the things that I do ask my guests is, do you have a recipe for living you would like to share with our listeners this morning?
Yeah, I have a wee recipe for living. Now, I would say, ultimately, even though I'm a scientist, I have quite a simple philosophy in life, and it's whatever you do, do it with kindness. And the reason I say that as my recipe is because acts of kindness can have an extraordinary ripple effect.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and this is where my scientist head comes on, because I can't resist explaining to people the scientific evidence of this ripple effect in kindness.
Yeah.
You know, that there's been research at Harvard University where they have studied social networks. So, for example, a social network they studied of 12,000 people and 250,000 social connections between them.
Mm-hmm.
And they found that, you know, happiness, if a person was happy for any reason, then that happiness produced a ripple effect. And what happened is you increased the happiness of the people that you connect with, but they then take the happiness that they've gained from you and they pass it on to the people that they're connected to. And they those people then, who feel happier as a consequence, pass on the happiness to other people. And coming from any one individual, happiness was going out to three social steps. So, like, they call it the 3 degrees rule, 3 degrees of separation. In other words, your emotional state, if you're feeling happy, you impact your friends, your friends' friends, and your friends' friends' friends. So they actually proved the concept of ripple effect. So then what they did is they looked at another a type of social network, and they said, is kindness the same? Do you get a ripple effect from kindness? Because I think many of us observe this in our life. When you do something kind for someone, the person's lifted, they feel better, and they're more likely to show kindness to someone else. But what the Harvard research did is they actually proved in the lab, so to speak, by playing kind of business games where they asked one person to make an act of kindness, and they watched if other people connected to them would follow suit, and they found exactly the same thing. That every person being kind caused a ripple effect, at least to their friends, their friends' friends, and their friends' friends' friends. What that ultimately means is, when you do something kind now, today, for someone, at some point during today, you're not just affecting the person you're being kind to, but actually
right.
people that they're connected to and people that they're connected to. So the effect of your act of kindness goes far further.
Yeah.
Even to people that you will never meet in your life, but yet they're gaining in some way from an act of kindness that you do. So that's
right.
why I say to people, whatever you do, just do it with kindness, and you will actually make a difference.
That is an awesome contribution. And
well,
I have to
you.
Tell you this, though. For a scientist, you surely speak with a lot of heart.
Oh, thank you.
It's amazing, though, because I think from a scientist perspective, I mean, one thing's more from an analytical standpoint of view. And, of course, your example does do that. But it's wonderful because you truly explain the concept of, hey, by just doing one little gesture today, right now, no telling how that effect, that force of energy that goes through and beyond, beyond your sight, your line of sight, basically.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Yeah, that's a really good way of saying it. It's beyond your line of sight, because it is. Because all these little acts of generosity, of compassion and kindness go way beyond your line of sight, because you're affecting people three social steps away from you. And and three social steps are not just friends of friends, but friends of friends of friends. And now most of the friends of friends of friends of my friends, most of the friends of the friends of, the, of my friends, I'm tongue-tied, I have never met in my life, nor will I ever meet, but yet they are actually benefiting from my behavior.
Yeah.
And meaning, so all of your listeners today, do something kind today, and know that you're in some way making a positive impact in the world, because it does not stop just with the person that you help. It ripples on for a long time.
Very true. That energy goes on, and we tend to have this short-sightedness, though, because what we don't see, we don't care.
Yeah, absolutely. It's so true. And this is one of the reasons why I describe the science of things to people. And I guess this is my unique contribution, I suppose, to the kind of self-help and mind-body-spirit book community of sorts. As I find when I explain some of the scientific research, how things actually work, people start to have faith in themselves. They start to understand that they're far more powerful than they thought they were. We start to understand that the mind is more important, more powerful than we think it is. And that's such an empowering thing, because rather than just feeling powerless, which is what the world often teaches us, again, this is why I teach the science, is people start to believe, wait a minute, I can actually make a difference, not only in my own life, but I can make a difference in the world. And it's such an empowering thing, you know, to give people that faith in themselves. It's a wonderful thing, I think.
Very true. David, you certainly have personalized science to a different level. So thank you very much for that. And
thank
you for the great recipe for living, and as well as spending this hour with me on From My Mama's Kitchen. To all our listeners, thank you for being with us. Please join me next Tuesday morning. My guest will be author Meadow Lynn. Meadow and I will be discussing about how you can discover your inner mystic chef and create dishes, even whole meals, that add an entirely transcendent and magical dimensions to your holiday cooking. Her new book, The Mystic Cookbook, will help you nourish the body as well as the spirit and inspire love and romance from the kitchen. For additional information about this show and future shows, please go to FromMyMamasKitchen.com. Thank you for listening and have a great week. David, thank you again and have a great day.
It's my pleasure. And I can vouch for Meadow's book because I've read it and it's brilliant.
Fantastic. Good for you.
It's fantastic, yeah. Right,
thank
you. Have a great day yourself.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.